Hello and welcome to Hey Art, What's Good? We're a podcast where we like to go to cool art things and see what's good with them. My name's Alice.
And my name's Rosie.
And something we like to do here on Hey Art, What's Good is to check in with each other and see what's good with us. So Rosie, what's good with you?
Well, thank you for asking. What's good with me is I'm no longer hungover.
Yay!
Because I just suffered like the worst hangover, one of the worst hangovers of my life yesterday. And yesterday was the day we were meant to record this. So thank you very much for letting me recover. Because yeah. No one would have wanted to like talk to me or hear my voice yesterday.
I mean, it sounded like you needed the recovery time. But it was awful hangover.
Yeah. So it's good that I'm better. And also I had a good night out. So It was all good.
Oh, well, there you go.
No, it's part of life's rich tapestry.
Well, it's not just...
What doesn't kill you? And I'm literally, like, cutting out drinks significantly now, which will make me super healthy.
Well, that's true. I'm sure your liver will think, hey, that's good.
And I'll save some dollar.
Some dollar
so
bills.
So loads of good things are happening
there
as a result
go.
Of this hangover.
One bad thing. Yeah. Well, see, there you go.
So see, good things, bad things. What's the difference? What about you, Alice? What's good?
Well, what's good with me is I was just telling Rosie there, I was like, ooh, I bought some new books. That's going to be my good thing. And then I realized the actual better good thing, because I haven't started reading those books yet, so I feel as that's not fair. I've become obsessed with a YouTube channel, and it's just, well, it's a specific show on a YouTube channel. Ooh. So you definitely would have seen them in your recommendations or your whatevers. It's by a channel called Bon Appetit. It's quite a big media conglomerate in New York. And they do this one where it's like gourmet chef attempts to make like Twinkies or like Gushers or just a variety of American like snacks
trash.
And stuff.
Yeah.
But it's so good. Everyone's so wholesome. It's just nice watching people cook. And because it's all like terrible snack foods, which to be fair look nice in the end, I don't get hungry because I don't want to eat them.
Yeah.
So like there's other like cooking shows I like to watch, but then I'm like, I've got to stop because I'm getting really hungry.
Absolutely.
And there's nowhere on this earth I can be bothered to make this meal. So
yeah.
So this is better, and it's also just funny.
That reminds me of what's that channel where they take, it's a YouTube thing, and they take recipes from like TV shows.
Yeah, Binging with Babish.
That's it, because they did one for Always Sunny.
I think he's done a couple for Always Sunny.
It's probably my favorite, because they did like rum ham, milk steak. They did like riot juice and...
Oh, yeah.
What is it? Fight milk. Made four bodyguards.
Five bodyguards.
Four bodyguards, five bodyguards. Fight milk.
What was it saying?
Okay, perfect.
Get the strength of a crow or something. Wow, we are 2 minutes and 47 seconds in. And
welcome to the podcast.
Has really just... Oof.
But this is how we like to set the tone. We're here to have a good time.
That's true.
And take you on the journey with us.
Well... What journey did we go on most recently, Rosie, would you say?
Oh, we went to the Lang.
You did.
And it was actually so good. We've been to see like a good amount of stuff at the Lang, and this might be one of my favourite exhibitions that I've ever seen there.
Yeah, I think I might have to agree with you there. It's simply wonderful.
And not what I expected at all.
Yeah, because I mean, I had a vague idea, and obviously where I wanted to go was like, oh yeah, sounds kind of cool. And they were kind enough to give us some tickets.
Thank you.
But when we actually got there, like, oh dang, there's so much stuff and it's so like interestingly curated.
Yes.
So I guess we'll just dive right in and talk about it. The exhibition is called The Enchanted Interior. And if you live in or around Newcastle, you would have seen adverts for it everywhere. Like, what is it? Monument Metro Station, Central Station Metro Station.
The crack.
Also just like on buses and that. Mm-hmm. So they obviously want people to go see it. And it's really mint. So off the bat, I'm going to say, do go see it.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. And we're about to tell you why.
So I want to tell you exactly why this exhibition's curation was like exciting to me.
Yeah, please do.
So we'll go to a little context about what it's actually about.
That's a good place to start.
I think the context of like the artwork and the name of the exhibition as well, because I'm a big believer in just showing up to things because you shouldn't have to do a whole load of research to enjoy stuff. Mm-hmm. And like, that's just my personal stance. Some people like research, like Alice.
I
and
do
that's,
like research.
That's cool and do that. But my way is valid too.
Absolutely.
So the name of the exhibition and kind of the overarching theme, it refers to historically in art and like, yeah, like classical art, which the Lang is kind of known for exhibiting, women are subjects and not artists. Mm. And they're like muses, but not like the talent.
Yeah.
And we've seen this like through loads of stuff. But this specifically looks at a almost kind of a genre. I don't know if that's like the right...
Yeah, because it's like...
It's just like lots of people were doing it in lots of different places over a good amount of time. And it's
quite,
kind of...
Yeah, quite a long time.
Yeah, so it's kind of, if it wasn't a genre, you could argue it is.
I would say so, definitely. I mean, it's just like very specifically looking at the representation of like the general interior and specifically women's place in it. So it could be in a range of like... settings and circumstances. Like it could be kind of more like still life documentary stuff, you're kind of more traditional
like portraits
or even more traditional kind of like allegorical like oldie timey stories and that. And it's just kind of really looking at, I mean, especially in the older stuff, like just like the kind of dangerous or like
temptress because kind of. I feel like the ones that really stood out to me were the ones where, because a lot of it was about women being objects of beauty and therefore like ornamental in the home.
Yes.
So there's like that, like a lot of like caged birds imagery and like pets and stuff. But it is, because that's, you know, history that happened. A lot of the time women were just assets in marriage and stuff like that. And they were kind of part of a man's property from a father to a husband and so on. So it's looking at like the representation of women throughout history, from everything from like trophies to sirens temptresses and dangerous women who will like get you in a bit of trouble.
And then
exciting
kind of ends flipping all that on its head with kind of specifically takes against that kind of historically, and then more contemporary female artists kind of turning that kind of that this whole theme like back on its head. So it's meant, the exhibition's in like 7 parts. So do you want to, should we have a little walkthrough?
We can try. I can't remember.
That's okay. I wrote them all down.
Full disclaimer, I want to tell the listeners. So I stayed at my friend's at the weekend before I went on the night out that I was punished for.
Yes, that ultimately ruined you.
And And I left like most of my stuff at her house. So I left all my notes from this exhibition at Emma's house. And like, I'm just doing all this from memory. Sorry. And I was meant to see it like yesterday, and then I was meant to see it today. It's just not worked out. Yeah. But I think I can do it. I've got good memory.
I can do the more technical aspect of Curation Corner, wherein I name things and then you can talk about it.
Awesome.
All right, perfect. So as I say, the exhibition is in, I said 7, was I right? Yes, it's in 7 parts. Nice. And we've talked about this before with long exhibitions. There's a whole bunch of writing.
So much to read. You have to writing, actually, yeah. I would say like be picky because, well, I'm dyslexic, so I don't know. But I find it really tiring. And I think we've talked about art fatigue and like museum feet or gallery. What is that? You museum feet?
We're museum feet. You're art fatigue.
Well, me and my mum is museum or gallery overload.
Overload, that's the one.
But for the podcast, I thought a more general term is art fatigue.
Yes.
Reading. It takes a lot out of you and you're taking a lot in. So it's a lot, like you're seeing all this stuff, you're reading all this stuff, you're trying to comprehend all this stuff. With the Lang, God bless them, they do so much work for you. Like, I could know everything I needed to know about every single piece there, basically.
Yes.
And the staff are always really helpful and nice and knowledgeable. It's just a great time. But I'd say if you're anything like me, select very carefully what you want to learn more about, because at the beginning I always fall into the same mistake of like, ooh, that's cool, and read about it. Ooh, that's cool, and just like read everything in the first room, and then by the third room I'm like, oh god,
super duper picky.
yeah And then I feel like the last room I didn't do enough, like I didn't do anything justice because I could barely read anything. But
yeah, that's fair.
But it, you know, don't have to.
That's true. It's don't fine. Have to. Yep.
Still enjoyed it.
I mean, a good thing, you can kind of assess the theme of each space without having to read it all, which is just cool. All that visual links, all that like curation and all that.
Yeah.
So the first room is all about captivating beauty. And I learned a new thing in one of the many bits of reading, is that there was this thing in the British artistic scene circa 1860 to about 1900 called the cult of beauty. So it's painting was intended for maximum desirability. So kind of moving away from your more bog standard religious iconography and being all about like luxury and excess.
A bit more indulgent.
Which works really well when you're painting all these beautiful interiors with all these beautiful women kind of placed in them.
Yeah, they are very like place. They're like lounging and they're, I think, placed in the composition to emphasize their beauty and mm-hmm. to reflect the beauty of their environment. And it's very particular. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them like don't look comfortable.
Yeah.
They look placed.
Yep.
And that's where this whole like caged bird thing, mm-hmm. like, yeah, well, you get it.
That's a section coming up next.
Ooh.
But this very first section was, it wasn't not an installation piece, like a full installation. It wasn't just a painting on the wall. They like built a thing for it.
Yeah.
It was cool.
This was lush. So a lot of the interiors I noticed were kind of, they looked kind of Asian.
It was all kind of like Middle Easty.
I was thinking like is this Empire time?
Yeah, Egypt and Constantinople,
yes,
and that kind of neck of the woods.
So think of these beautiful tiled villas with kind of like canopies of like, oh, like got beautiful gardens and courtyards and fabrics and stuff.
That kind of stone as well.
Yeah, and like, oh, it was gorgeous. Mm. Like it was basically like picking where you'd want to go on holiday. It was so nice. And then some of them just had like pet, like really exotic pets and like beautiful objects surrounding them. And it was like, you could like enter into these worlds. I could see why they were so appealing, and they still are appealing. But one of them had like kind of a canopy built over it.
Yeah.
And I'll put a picture on Instagram because it was so cool, because it meant the light was kind of dappled.
Yeah.
It was lovely as it kind of came through. Were they like slats of wood kind of?
I don't know how you describe it, but as soon as you see the photo, you know what I'm on about.
In like warm countries in Europe and just warm countries in general, there are these like, they're there all, they're like over balconies and stuff to like a little bit of shade, but also to let the air flow.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they are, because we do not live in a country that warrants that.
I was going to say, you think you'll be pressed to find one up here.
But it just like, and there was just one painting in that little space, but it kind of, it was an installation.
Yeah.
And I feel like my eyes are being open to what installations can be after we went to the MIMA last, and there was video installations, and I wouldn't have necessarily thought of them as video installations, but this was like a painting installation.
Yeah.
It was lush.
It was pretty sick. Well, that painting in particular was Harem Life, Constantinople, I think. Or it was either that one or Life in the Harem, Cairo. They were both by the same dude, John Frederick Lewis. And what was quite interesting for this, and kind of encapsulates a lot of this particularly like Middle Eastern art, is the kind of idea of the other and the idea of the exotic. So it's like Life in Harem, or like a harem, which I don't know why it's spelled like that, but so it's like the interior, sure, and there's usually like a lady like lounging in some way, and these two in particular, there's like the window, so you can see outside, you can see like Constantinople or whatever city it was, like beautiful but tiny, and obviously so far away because she's not allowed to leave. And what's interesting,
it's like just in sight.
Yes, well, what's interesting as well, and it, you know, it's a whole thing because only men were allowed to paint back then, is that he would never have been allowed to set foot in a harem because they're all married to someone else, and another man could not go in there, and that was reflected in some of the writings and stuff. So it's like, well, I think I get it. I've seen a lady before. I know how these things work.
I've seen a lady before. See one lady, you've seen them all.
Well, that's what I always say.
That would transport ourselves back to like whenever this was. Probably.
1857. But I mean, that's quite a big theme with a lot of this, because obviously men know best and should be allowed to paint. So,
I mean, they are the stronger sex.
Well, of course.
It's just simply better.
So that's kind of a big overarching theme here. So the captivating beauty of showing the beauty of both like the place, the space, and the women in it, but never having really truly experienced it.
Yeah, imagined spaces. Well, kind of out of reach. So as much as the city and freedom is out of reach for the subjects, the space is also out of reach for the artist.
Yeah.
Weird.
I like it.
Because I liked how that installation, as we're calling it, mirrored another piece in that room really well. This is like talking about really strong curation, because there was mainly kind of classical and historical artworks throughout this exhibition, but there was kind of a sprinkling of contemporary works.
Yes, and which I appreciate.
So good. And I feel like that's like the Lang's really like pushing the like like they're pushing what they are known for into something else. Like they're really becoming like more of a contemporary space as well, which is very exciting. And it, making these connections between old and new. So all of the contemporary artists were women, which was lush, or all of the ones I saw.
Which is
obviously amazing because it's about women. This whole exhibition's about women. And unfortunately, just historically, there were like, I mean, Gorilla Girls. I've talked about the Gorilla Girls so many times before, but look up their work if you want some like cool feminist artwork. Because they're very like, it was all politically about why galleries are inherently sexist.
Yeah.
So it's lovely to see these kinds of exhibitions where it's kind of amending that or trying to offer some form of like solace, I don't know.
Yeah, and also as well, like very much reflecting on this was the bad thing that happened.
And we,
it's not,
yeah.
It's not just like, so this was like the style at the times. Like, no, no.
Like this was wrong.
Yeah.
And that's, and we know this.
Yeah.
And yeah, the whole, it's okay that it was wrong as long as we talk about how it was wrong and why it shouldn't happen again.
Yeah.
And it was just so refreshing. So the exhibition, like, sorry, so the piece in this exhibition that I thought mirrored the installation well, and I think this is right, it's a 2008 piece called Hanging 101 Pages by, I'm so bad at names. Can I spell it?
Sure.
Or do you want to try? It's like Afruz Amigi.
Let us have a look.
It's also really blurry.
Perfect. Yeah, Afruz Amigi, yeah.
Yay! So just passing the phone.
Yeah.
And it was this beautiful and huge, like delicate hanging piece. So it wasn't attached to the wall. And it was like this white kind of fabric. I believe it's woven polythene. And it was just held by a little bit of like plexiglass at the top. And it was like cut out.
Yeah.
It wasn't, so there was no like drawing on it, but it was the most delicate cut out of this fabric.
Mm.
And like, I mean, there's just so many, we could talk about this for a whole episode because there's just so much context, but visually, just that link was gorgeous and really led you around the space. And I just really appreciate that. So the piece itself is in reference to the story 1001 Nights, or Arabian, it's the Arabian Nights stories. And it is in reference to, like, it reflects all the other wall-based works and stuff, like, thematically. And there's, like, you know, similar imagery because, and I don't know if this is right, so I need to check my facts. But I'm pretty sure it's in Muslim art that it's, like,
Islamic,
yeah, like, culturally. Because I don't know if it's actually a religious rule, but just I know that culturally they tend not to depict like people in their work. So that's why you get these amazing, beautiful, like they use patterns, so these like geometry, like stars and like gorgeous patterns.
Crazy, beautiful, symmetrical tiles and that.
Absolutely. And they use like calligraphy as well. So use like, because they're like, writing is just cool anyway.
Like,
just anything that isn't our like bog standard letters looks fantastic to me. So like their calligraphy is so cool, and they'd like make it like writing in writing, and it would just be so immense. So they're like experts at patterns, and this work is, I think, has interpreted that so well. So there's, it's all, it's just, the theme is just so good. It's just so juicy.
And like similar to the kind of installation piece around that other painting we're talking about, the way the light's on it, it creates shadows, so you get all that dappled light as well.
Yeah. And I feel like I love like the idea of like old storytelling methods and like shadow puppets and telling stories around the fire and the light dancing. And there's all this like, there's links.
Yeah.
There's links, and I love it.
I do love a good link.
And just shadows are pretty.
Shadows are pretty. I do love a bit of dappled light.
Yes.
It's always nice.
I think that's one of my favourite lyrics. It's from a Simon and Garfunkel song. And it's about, I'm dappled and drowsy and ready for sleep.
Oh, that's cute.
Isn't it? They're poets. Yes, back to it. If you walk through onto the next room or the next section.
I was going to say there's another section, which is what you were talking about before. This one's called The Gilded Cage. So it's kind of...
This is probably my favourite bit.
It was very cool. So, I mean, we're kind of all everyone's heard the term, the Gilded Cage. It kind of refers specifically to the inequality of marriage. So women may technically gain stuff, you know, like a house and property. Well, not really. But, you know, it's like she seems to gain stuff, but she loses all her freedom because yeah. now she is part of that property.
And it was kind of sold back then as like security.
Yeah, it was basically, if I can't get married, I'm going to be destitute. Yeah. So it was kind of like...
So it's like between like secure but trapped mm-hmm. or free and also... afraid.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Uncertain.
So like a lot of the paintings here like reflect women's lives as looking, you know, like idyllic and lives of leisure, really reclining on the beautiful sofas and that. But obviously, right of the case, all very, very controlled. And there was a really cool painting which was one by a lady back in the day.
Ooh.
From an artist called Evelyn De Morgan, and it's called The Gilded Cage. So it's from it says 1900 to 1919, so I was like, that took a while to do. It's big, and I get it, and I feel so surely wasn't allowed to maybe do that much, but it's...
Is this the one with the grumpy husband?
Yes.
Oh my God, I love it. I'm so glad you're talking about this.
So it's this lady kind of looking at, like quite a young lady, looking out wistfully at this big open window where there's like just a bunch of townspeople, or just people, I assume they're from a nearby town. Like having a good old time. Someone's got like a loot or something, and you can just see there's a lot going on.
See some bum.
You do see some bum through like this dude's like sheer pants. We're just pointing that out.
It just looks like a great time.
Yeah. But then next to her on the other side of the window, kind of facing the viewer, I guess. I don't know if he's looking like directly.
Yeah, he's not making eye contact. He's kind of like looking down, but.
Yeah, he is like an older, as Rosie said, grumpy gentleman.
Looks boring.
And he looks boring because obviously he doesn't want to be out there. He's not even looking at
the
window.
He's like sat at his desk.
Yeah, he sat at his desk. He might be some kind of merchant. I feel as I recall like coins and stuff being on the desk, but I'm not too sure. But the big kind of visual symbolic link here is that above him, out of sight of the window, is a little bird in a little golden gilded cage. And it's obviously just kind of reflecting how she feels. I don't know if it was she feels like that because she got married. I assume she did get married because, you know, it was
the time.
1900.
It was the thing to do.
Yeah, you know. But, I mean, I guess just more reflecting that general, like, unhappiness for, you know, the whole institution. And I think something that's worth pointing out is I think a lot of the more historic female artists in this exhibition were obviously, like, women of means
yes.
back in the day, but even...
But it's cool that that's what she chose to paint.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
And I did notice, so the woman in the picture is wearing, like, a gold dress, so it's, like, that visual link to the bird, and then the man's wearing red. And I'm sure there was something about women wearing a lot of red in this exhibition because it's like very like seductive and dangerous.
Yeah.
And
passionate.
Yeah, exactly. But I like the man's wearing red and the majority of the room, like the carpet and walls are red. So it's like, so yeah, she's obviously the bird in the cage, but then he's like this home and this like, he is the cage.
Yeah.
He's her cage.
Mm-hmm.
It was just lush.
Yeah.
It's just a really cool painting. And it's so like, yeah, it's a proper old one. That's something I said when we were there. I'm not like a massive fan of like Geat old paintings, but this was exactly how I want to like look at old paintings, like where it's made relevant for me.
Yep, definitely. I mean, that's the sort of thing, like the curators do an amazing job. Don't know how they do it, but it's like stuff like this, like such an interesting theme like that. And like, I feel like quite a few of the paintings in this exhibition like belong to the Lang, I guess, because like I've seen them, like, do you know, like outside the Lang, like on the wall they've got like big like just pieces, like like there's the lady with the basil thingy, we'll talk about that in a second. But like I've seen these before, but it's because I've seen them outside on the wall at the Lang, so it's nice to have them in a bit of context.
Yes, yeah, and it really goes to show that the same painting can be read so many different ways. You could see just, and I feel like I've seen so much already at the Lang that could reflect this, but because of the like curation, I didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And this has just made it so exciting.
Yeah, oh, honestly.
So if you're like me and you don't always find really old stuff the most exciting art, this could be a good way in.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I think one of my favourite sections is the next one when you go through the doors, called Disturbing Stories.
Yes, and the best kind of stories.
Honestly, love this. So it's like a major theme of all these images. And I say images because we've got some photography in this and also actually just general stuff. Like, actually, it might be the next one. Either way, it's more than just paintings. the general theme is like the deadly consequences of women not doing as they're told, really, mm-hmm. or like being told what to do, like very specifically, and like, oh, you can't, look what happens if you don't do that. Mm. So there was, I've got a couple favorite ones. One is The Last of Shalott, which I feel as though I've heard something. I mean, this is just like one of those oldie timey stories, I guess, like The Lady of Shalott. So yes, so The Lady of Shalott was a poem by Alfred Lord Tennyson. Lord Alfred Tennyson. The Lang spelled it wrong on the bit of paper, which is what I'm looking at here.
Gosh. Send them a strongly worded email.
So it's basically, there's this old like Arthurian myth in this poem where this lady is has some kind of curse on her, because, you know, that's a way to learn.
Yeah, women.
What they're like. So she's got to live in complete isolation. She can't actually look at the world outside of where she is. So she's got tons of mirrors all over the place, so she can like catch a glimpse and stuff of the outside. So one day,
she's like OG Rapunzel.
Yeah. So one day she catches a glance of a rather handsome knight outside. Uh-huh. So she naturally has to turn around. And because she does that, the mirror cracks, which is like, oh, dang. The curse has happened. So basically, yeah, she's, I don't know what the actual consequence of the curse is. I assume she dies or someone else dies.
Something bad.
Yeah, just something bad.
The mirror cracks, haven't you had bad luck?
Well, true. But the point is basically, it's like, look, she wanted things. She saw a man and decided she must have him by simply turning around to actually look at him.
A woman should not be wanting.
Well, true.
And they should be seen and not heard.
That's a massive theme of this whole thing.
Yeah.
Just as a general kind of blanket statement. But I really like that. I mean, it's all this oldie timey art. It's all very allegorical. And I just like it because it's just
listening to you tell that story. Uh-huh. Side note, new podcast.
Okay.
Us really badly retelling myths.
Half remembering yeah. stories. I can't wait. That can be a mini series. Let us know if you want that.
Be so much fun. I would absolutely, I'd just be terrible.
I mean,
I'm along for it. I'm along for the ride.
All right, perfect.
What's the next section?
The next section, which is in this same room, was Mint. I believe this might be one of your favourites, called Intoxicating Homes.
Hell yeah.
And it's exactly like that. I've literally wrote, Victorians loved a good interior.
Victorians did love a good interior.
So much so that they didn't care if it literally killed them.
Yes. Like, it's like that whole thing of like, you know, like, fashion's meant to hurt and stuff. Mm. And like, it's, you know,
No pain, no gain.
Yeah, literally. So, and I will have to try and find this documentary, and I do apologize if there isn't a link on the blog post. I'm sorry I failed you. But I saw this amazing documentary. I think it was by Lucy Worsley. She's my favorite TV historian, so you should just watch her anyway. But it was about like the deadly things in the home. And my favorite was, I'm sure they put, for some wallpaper paints, the main ingredient was like arsenic or something.
Yep.
Jesus Christ. Like, and that's just one example. Oh, and yeah. I'm sure, was it William Morris who like quite famously designed wallpapers and stuff? Like, these people didn't know. Like, I mean,
well, there's a fun thing,
it's
like
just
in the,
ridiculous.
They've got like an example of some wallpaper which wasn't poisonous, but saying wallpapers like this were, and in a little bit of information, it was like after like tons of children started to die, yeah. They like decided to like have a look, hey, what's the new thing in the environment? Oh, it's the wallpaper. Oh, it's laced with arsenic. Who knew?
They loved their wallpaper.
Because the manufacturers were like, we'll keep on making it though.
Exactly. Yeah.
It sells.
Well, that's it. And like, I'm sorry, that still happens today. Mm. We're killing the planet.
Yep.
I feel like we talk about it more and more, but it's becoming more and more relevant. So
very worryingly relevant.
You know. And it's important. And if art should be one thing, it is relevant.
Mm.
It doesn't even have to be good. No. Okay, maybe not. But in this space about the home and stuff, they had like a little example room, and it was so cute. It was just, it wasn't really, but it was like a little space, and they had like a piano and some like relevant paintings and a little like divider. And did they have a cage or something? I'm sure they did.
Yeah, they did. A little gilded bird cage.
Exactly. And then a quite lovely moment where there's a painting that's really delicate, and it was, I think it's another one where it was a really old piece, mm-hmm. but by a woman, and it's where she'd paint her interior. Just very, it was beautiful. It was so little, but because it's so old and watercolor is so delicate, you had to like lift over her.
I love things like
a
that.
A little rug thing, like a little throw, like, little like, velvet.
Yep.
Situation like that's protecting it from the light, and it was just like, please cover me up when you're done. And it's nice because it kind of, there's a lot of ways I don't like the like preciousness of art objects, and I think sometimes it's kind of, it makes people feel detached from art, but things like that are really nice because it kind of gives you a little bit of responsibility of like, something, it's something to care for, it's something that needs like care and attention, and that we as the public and as the viewer very rarely get that responsibility, and I just like it.
Yeah, and it's like nice that we're like, oh, this is important, so it should be an exhibition.
Yeah, so just because it's delicate doesn't mean it should be excluded.
Yes.
In fact, the very opposite, and I'm just happy that they included it.
Yeah, me too.
So yeah, just like a bunch of fab stuff.
Oh yeah.
Was that the also, because it was next to that, there was another installation, a very contemporary one.
Yeah.
Was that the same theme?
I think this was the different theme, which is fairly similar, called Becoming Objects.
Yes. And again, women, objects of desire. You know the drill.
Mm-hmm.
There was a really interesting contemporary installation, which I just like the actual room it was in.
I know. And so like, to give you a little bit of, I mean, this is an audio podcast, I'm not going to do the noise, but imagine the sound of a really powerful electric fence that was just kind of buzzing in this room. Like, and I was like, oh my God, is there an electric fence here? It looked like it was, but it wasn't, because that would be far too stupid and dangerous.
So the piece was called Home by Mona Hatoum.
Yeah.
On loan from the Tate, which is quite exciting. And it was made in 1999. And it was really interesting. So yeah, you heard it before you saw it, and you kind of got a vague glance at it, and it looked like it had like bars, it was like a prison,
like
a cell, and then in this cell was a very unhomely scene. So the title is to be discussed, maybe by us, maybe not. And it was a completely white like box apart from these bars that you kind of look through, and it was a wooden table on wheels, which reminded me of like a hospital bed or something.
Yeah,
or
even like a medical kind of tray, trolley dealy.
Like, I wrote like lab or hospital. Ooh. And because of the like white walls and this table on wheels, and then it on top was all these silver, I'm just going to call them instruments.
Yeah.
It looked really medical. It looked really clinical and not homely.
Mm-hmm.
But the instruments themselves were all household objects.
I think there was like a colander in there. There's a colander.
There was like a sieve. It was like a salad, tongs or something, knives and forks. There was I'm sure there was like a squeezy thing for garlic. Garlic crusher.
Garlic mincer,
I think so. Those sorts of things. And they were all like wired up. And there must have been like three light bulbs, and they were like, under a colander, under a cheese grater, and under maybe the sieve or something like that. So that these lights would like slowly kind of buzz, like soft light kind of coming on and off really gently, but it would cast these kind of lovely shadows, but them in themselves,
again, that dappled light,
it looked like, because the whole point of that dappled light is very much like the light is outside and you're inside and you can't get to it.
Yes.
You know, you're like, I'm imagining like the light coming through prison bars or something. So yeah, it was not homely at all.
No, well, just the way you described it there, actually, like very kind of medical and clinical, reflects on a point kind of touched on a little bit earlier in the exhibition, where because women were the property of their husbands back in the day, the husbands, if they weren't too happy with them, or if they like specifically wanted like something from the woman, but didn't want them around, they could just like institutionalize them in these like horrible, it was like a whole trend in Victorian times.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, my wife has like hysteria. I'm sure there was literally, I can't remember what the exact terminology was, but it was basically like overreading was a thing
if your woman's too educated.
Oh, get a locked
don't up. Want that. Don't want a thinking.
No,
God forbid.
Yeah. Ooh. But that, like, that's quite a good link there, which I didn't think of and told us now.
And you could even, like, go in, if you wanted to, like, go into that, the depths of that, you could even say, like, electrotherapy and, like, really gross stuff.
Oh,
and that.
Absolutely, yeah.
But there is something really, like, uncanny and quite sinister about it, I thought, because it's, yeah, these gleaming objects, and they're so familiar, yet in this environment, they're unfamiliar.
Yeah.
Very cool. So it's kind of flipping what is domestic and what is kind of what is feminine.
Yeah.
Because if, like, a lot of the time, I feel like a lot of people would have associated these kitchen and domestic objects with women.
Mm.
And then, yeah, in a whole new setting, what do they mean?
Honestly.
So when we're saying, like, there was such a mix of things in the show, right next door is this really contemporary piece. And this is right next to this little model.
Yeah,
house thing,
I quite like that, like the symmetry. And...
yeah, so it's like, well, here's the room of then versus the room of now, kind of. Or,
yeah.
You know, just really, really well done.
Yeah.
I liked it. And I think the section we're talking about with the objects had one of my favorite pieces, which was that picture. Like, it was the photograph
yes.
in a very beautiful gilded frame, but then it was made to look like it was melting onto the floor. Mm-hmm. It had a very Banksy vibe to it.
It was,
if you
very
ask me.
Cool. Oh, okay.
And it was, yeah, so then all the, like, the bottom of the picture is all warped, like it's all like pooled, and the, like, the frame's all, like, warped and stuff. It's really cool. But, and when you first look at it, you think it's a painting.
Yeah,
you get it close, you realize it's just a really well done photograph.
Because I think it's
Aphrodite
to make
it?
You think a bit like a mirror.
Yeah,
I think is kind of pooling. So yeah, oh yeah, that piece was called Hero from the Reframe series from 2018 by Maisie Broadhead. And yeah, I think you're right. I think it was Aphrodite. She's just kind of like lounging at a column. It probably has
so
some
many women
kind...
lounging.
Oh, I love to lounge. Was it ladies who lounge?
Ladies who lounge.
But it was such a kind of interesting space. And, like, this section and room is a lot where the more kind of contemporary stuff in.
Yeah.
But less so than the next section slash room,
yeah.
which is was almost entirely more contemporary stuff and all entirely by women, I believe.
Yes. This is, like, a very girly room. Well, it wasn't actually girly at all, but, like, technically.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the first kind of, there's two sections of this one. The first one is called Experiencing Enclosure. So kind of to, like, oppose the previous implications of, like, women and interiors, this one pictures the female body physically engaged in forms of movements, exertion, or action that reveal their psychological state. So it's kind of like that interesting kind of double-edged sword, kind of. Several meanings. So there was this was a fun little, like, corridor in the middle of the room, which is interesting, and it had, like, some drawings, some photos, maybe a painting in there. But my favorite was this series of photos by Clementia Haywarden. I think, again, this is from back in the day, so, like, this was photographs from, like, the 1860s, so, like, fairly early in photography.
Yeah.
So it kind of speaks to, like, I guess the means that this lady would have had, Lady Haywarden. She was apparently a pioneer of photography in Britain.
Oh, good for her.
Which is cool. And a lot of her work, just, like, in the past, has been interpreted by just, you know, showing beautiful women in spaces and stuff. But kind of when you kind of look into it more, it's kind of like more of a representation of probably how she felt. So I think there was these two photos next to each other. And I think it was, like, two separate photos and not one photo, because I think she had two girls, like, two daughters, and this could have been in the same room. But it's basically this girl or the two of them looking out of these windows or window. I don't know if it was two photos or not. We'll just assume it was one. And you can't really see, like, how beautiful the outside is because it's really overexposed because, you know, old film, you know how it is. But I mean, sure, they're looking outside, but they're stuck inside. They can't really go out without, like, you know, like a chaperone, as was the deal. And the walls are just really weirdly bare.
Yes.
And there's not really much happening, like,
ghost
just
house.
Around them. So ghost house.
Just saying that. Just throwing it out there.
But I just quite like that. I like the kind of idea.
And they are very artsy.
They are, yeah.
Which you wouldn't have thought for such an early period of photography.
Well, lots of kind of early photography, especially the 1860s, where you would have to have stayed fairly still. Like, they've kind of got a good jump up on film then, but, like, a contemporary would be, like, Henry Fox Talbot, who did a lot of, like, early photography, one of the other pioneers of British photography, but a lot of his photos are like still lives because they had to be.
Yes.
But like a lot of them are a lot more kind of pictorial, documentary. So this is quite pictorial if you can kind of compare it to obviously the paintings of women looking longingly outside, but this is the photo. So
yeah, therefore, that's very much cooler. Your thing. Yeah.
Yes. That's very much my jam.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that space as well because it made you, it was in kind of another installation, like the shadow one that we were talking about earlier, and it made you feel confined, like quite enclosed. And trapped. Not, yeah, and there was like an element of being trapped, and if there was a lot of people in that corridor, it's hard to move. And yeah, it's just an interesting display choice that was really helpful in like telling the story and like making the narrative more involved for the viewer.
Yeah, so, definitely. And I think I mentioned this in the episode we did a few weeks ago with Elna from the Mima, but I love how art galleries just make new rooms and put up a new wall, so put down some carpet. Why not?
Why not?
Obviously, they have, you know, the money and the means, but
the world's your oyster.
Cool, honestly.
If you're an art gallery.
There's a final section in this whole thing called Disappearing Bodies.
Yes.
And this section is kind of less about projecting like the lavishness and the wealth of a space, and this artists began to kind of include elements that were also intended to reflect like the psychology of the interior's owner, so like people who like kind of own that space and live there. So it's like there's a palpable human presence, whether that specifically be with a person being there, it's kind of a bit more interpretive than that. And a set of photos that I really loved was by Francesca Woodman, which I've seen before. I remember I was like, I was looking at these and I'm like, wait a second. Like I said in last week's episode, when we were talking about the Roy Lichtenstein at the Hatton, it was part of a larger series called Artist Rooms. When I went to the National Portrait Gallery in Scotland a few months ago, it was Woodman, Arbus and Mapplethorpe. And this was the Woodman part of that.
It's
Francesca
all
Woodman, honestly. So these were all like 1970s. And they're all like a series of self-portraits in Rhode Island, where she lived, I guess. And they're all like artsy in that there's this very palpable element of movement because she's used like a really low shutter speed and she's like kind of like having to dance about. And also she's naked, I think, but you can't really see because it's all blurry. But obviously the interiors are really sharp because they're not moving. And it's all in these like really weird kind of dilapidated environments.
It's very ghostly. It's another ghost house.
Yeah, another ghost house.
It's the same ghost
but
house.
But kind of a lot more contemporary one. But I just loved it because it's just like super interesting and you can kind of read a lot into it. And if that's reflecting the psychology of the person who owns it, then that's just a very kind of interesting way to kind of think about how they consider like the space they inhabit and all that.
Photography is so cool for that because it's you can only use what is literally there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I don't know, that's it. It's very like creative.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because well, it's like technically only a limited thing, like a limited amount of things you can do with your tool.
Mm-hmm.
Like unlike maybe a pencil. Or
yeah.
You know, you can do loads with a pencil. You can literally draw whatever you want or write whatever you want.
Yeah.
But with a camera, it's you'd think there'd be only so much you could do. But how wrong you'd be.
Well, that's like one of the really, really fun things with photography, and especially film photography like this would have been, is by choosing a film, by choosing a camera, you're already super duper limited in what you can do with it. So it's just nice.
But I think that can be really helpful sometimes for the creative process.
Oh, definitely.
If your options are limited, you've kind of only got a certain, like you've got a formula to follow, and then it's like how you adapt it is added to that, because it's not how I create art, so I find it interesting.
Yeah
And very opposite to a photograph, my last highlight from this exhibition was I was so excited to see they had a Cornelia Parker in this show. And that's an artist. Cornelia Parker is a contemporary artist I couldn't stop hearing about at university.
Oh, really?
All my tutors were obsessed with her. But this piece was Alter Ego, Boat with Reflection from 2010, silver plated.
Ooh.
And it's like a gravy boat. There's two gravy boats floating in the air, like from just like this kind of see-through string.
Yeah.
And one of them's upright and intact, and the other one's completely flattened and kind of positioned like a shadow.
Ooh.
And it's just really cool. It's cool because it's a whole new way to see the object, and it's playing around with the idea of value. Like, is one of those more valuable than the other? because one of them is still fully functioning as an object, but then arguably the other one is more art.
Ooh.
But then you've also rendered it useless. So it's just so many layers
depends
to
what
it.
Your uses.
And Ooh. Like, and yeah, and so, and technically as if it's silver plated, it still has its value. But so there's all these things. I just think it was so relevant because it's a domestic object. Maybe it mirrors the installation with the in the prison.
Oh, the home one, yeah.
Yeah. And so there's just loads of links throughout this whole exhibition, from room to room, theme to theme. And it's there's so much. Because we haven't even talked about there's like some video stuff. There's
oh my God, there's all sorts. Literally so much.
And I feel like this is already kind of a long episode. But
yeah.
I mean it had to be, because this was just, I say meaty a lot. This was meaty.
Quite meaty.
And I was just so excited to have... I was excited to be excited.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think I was going to.
Yeah. Because you're not the biggest fan of like your traditional kind of art history sort of stuff.
And I do like... I like, for example, when we went to go see... the portrait ones, and we're gonna go see the naked portrait.
Oh yeah,
that was really good.
That was
because that was quite similar in that it's like, here's a theme and we're gonna see what we can do with it, and
because they like fork and stretch it.
Yeah, and they used it to talk about all sorts of stuff, and it was fascinating because they like the curation isn't just about framing the actual artwork and presenting it, it's about giving it a context, so telling a story and making it relevant and making it interesting. And this exhibition was one of the most like successful that I've seen that does that, with this beautiful blend of old and new. And it really has convinced me this stuff is still really relevant. I'm just sick of seeing it in like National Trust properties and stuff. Because what, and I've said, it's like what I say about Renaissance art. Once you've seen one Jesus.
Oh my God.
I mean, once you've seen like 20 Jesuses.
So we've seen several Jesuses in our time.
You've seen a lot. And like, once you've seen 20, you have seen them all. I'm all Jesused out.
Yep.
And it's the exact same with like Georgian landscapes or like Victorian portraits or like whatever.
Yeah.
It's just, there's so many of them. All because like a lot of museums collect them and then present all of them in a room thematically. It's like, here's some landscapes, here's some portraits, but this was like rich.
Yeah, quite rich, and kind of a lot more like abstract, reflecting on different aspects of society at different points in time, which is just cool.
Like, it was real art history. It wasn't just like, here's some history via some art. It was like, no, this is real art history.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about history specifically through the gaze of art. And that's honestly how I love learning history, because I'm a bit of a history nerd. But I want to remind everyone that if you ever doubt how important art is, the reason we know everything about the past is through art and artifacts. That we don't actually know much about the past, but what we do know is from like historic, like hieroglyphics are art, and vases from like Roman Empire are art, and like all these beautiful objects that have been left behind that are just art tell a story. And that's why you should find it exciting.
Yeah, it's history, baby.
Yeah.
So right,
it's good to like nerd out about it.
It really is, yeah.
So well done, Lang.
Yes,
this was probably one of the most exciting things I've seen in the Lang for a while.
Oh my God, I know.
And like, that's not to say that other stuff's like poor, because it absolutely isn't, but this just like,
this kind of knocked it out the park a bit.
It struck a chord with us. I just think this was exactly what we like to see. And because we went with your sister Amy as well, and it was the exact same for her, and it was nice going round because we were all like taking different things away. We all had different favorites and we were spending time on different stuff. It was lush. It was just a really nice outing.
Yeah, a good afternoon out.
Yeah, went to the Journey for a cup of chai.
I got me hot chocolate,
so make a day of it.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's all good. Nice one. Well, I think that probably wraps it up.
Yeah, I think so. If I've fully talked your ears off this week. So thank you for listening.
Yes, and thanks, Lang, for inviting me along.
Yeah.
So like, this is one of them. It's one of the paid ones. But if you're a student, you get a discount. I think if you've got one of them art passes, I don't know anyone who has one, but people might.
We should probably have them.
Probably.
Whoops.
So I think students can get the art pass for a fiver, which is insane. For us, I think we'll have to pay like £30 or something. But hey. We'll see. A way we like to wrap up these episodes is to talk about something that we're looking forward to go, like, see, do, experience, something like that.
Just one last good thing before you go.
So what are you looking forward to, Rosie?
Well, I feel like we've been talking about ladies who lounge a lot this episode.
It has been a theme, yes.
So I am going to go home today, lounge on my sofa, and continue to play Sometimes Always Monsters.
Yes!
Which Alice came over to my house and downloaded it for me because she thought I'd like it. Like, she like put it on my computer. It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. And I love that you don't know what you're doing.
Yep.
It's
not a clue.
But it's like life. Mm-hmm. Like, it's literally a game of life. Like, mm-hmm. and I love, so it's this very cute, like pixely game.
Yeah.
And it's one of those where you can't walk diagonally. It's very like old Pokemon games
and
stuff.
Kind of like a top-down life sim.
Yeah. And it's just, it's really cute. But I like that, because I have anxiety. Like, it's not fun. So sometimes in games where there's loads of choices, and like in a lot of games it's really popular to have like different endings for the different choices you've made and stuff. And I like that one of the things they said at the very beginning of the game is that there are no right or wrong choices in this game.
It's because, like, you got the bad ending. Yes, so this is an ending
And I got an ending, and it said, is this how it ends? And I was like, no.
Hell no,
dude. Because I think I got, like, shot by a drug dealer. And that is, like, not what this game is about. It is a very wholesome game. Yeah. It's very quite, it's cute and nice.
It can be very wholesome,
but
or it cannot
I'm
be.
I'm playing it wholesome to start off with. But I 5 minutes in, I knew I was going to play it again.
Yeah.
So I'm loving it.
Glad you're enjoying it.
To add to it, to, like, go back to how I'm lounging, is because we have, at my house, a projector. For instead of a TV, because TVs suck and projectors are awesome. No judgment. And the boy has a Raspberry Pi, which is one of those like teeny tiny computers. Yeah. And I've synced my Steam account on my computer to a Steam link on the Raspberry Pi, so I can project the game and play it on the projector.
That's so convenient.
So that's how you lounge in 2019.
That's pretty good. Well done.
It is good. But I like, what I want to say is, it was nice to, like, because what we're all very much about, like, there are no right or wrongs, and there's no bad, like, you can't, you know, it's life. There are no right or wrong answers. It's just, we're just trying to, like, muddle around and figure it out. So just, like, calm my anxieties.
Yeah, all good.
What about you? What are you looking forward to?
Well, I'm looking forward to, I believe, the day this comes out, we're going to go check out the Durham Lumiere.
Yeah!
Because I believe it's a once every 2 years event.
Yes.
And didn't see it last year because it wasn't on. Didn't see it the year before because I didn't know it was a thing.
Yep.
So we're going to go see it this year. I'm very excited. Durham's nice. It's getting dark early and we can enjoy some pretty lights.
It's like a 50-minute train ride away, and we've never done an episode about Durham.
Oh, yeah.
So we need to amend that immediately.
Yes, I think we do.
And I think after that, it might inspire us to go somewhere like, because I know they have an amazing Oriental museum.
Yeah, the Woon Gallery.
I have no idea.
We'll find out.
But at the very least, I'm sure Durham University has an art gallery.
Yes.
So if you're in Durham and you know any good art galleries, hit us up.
Yes, because let us know.
We really don't know anywhere in Durham because it's quite small. And whenever I go, I'm like, pancakes, Riverwalk, go home.
Pretty much. Yeah, that's pretty much
Sometimes I go around the charity shops.
Yes.
Because it's just nice to, like, it's the nicest city to just wander.
Yeah.
And that's the activity. And I don't usually do art in Durham because I just, like, want to have a walk.
Yeah, it's a good place for a walk.
So this time I want to incorporate some art in between my walks.
Oh, hey, at the Lumiere, you can walk and see art at the exact same time. So that's what we'll do.
Hey. So maybe see you there.
Yeah. And again, if you've got any recs for art places in Durham or anywhere in general, you can send them along to it on Twitter and Instagram at heyartwhatsgood, or you can send me an email, heyartwhatsgood@gmail.com, or use a website. It's got a contact form, heyartwhatsgood.com.
And just check us out.
Yeah, man.
And maybe we should say, like, rate and subscribe and stuff, but we don't actually know how any of that works.
So if you'd like to subscribe and or rate us, ideally
give us a nice review.
A nice one would be nice, but hey, we don't control you, we don't know you,
we're just here.
Yes.
And so are you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Bye
bye.